right, welcome to the postgame. Cenk Uygur, Kyle Kulinski.
What's up, dude?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I think this is the first time. Well, no, this isn't the first time that we've spoken. Certainly on the postgame it is, but there was only one other time where we did a one-on-one where we were on air. That was a long time ago. I don't know if you remember this. We were discussing Sam Harris, Bill Maher versus Glenn Greenwald, you, Chomsky. You don't remember that?
Huh.
You don't remember that? It was on my show. It was on my radio show. It was on my YouTube show. And we went back and forth on that issue.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't remember it. I've done this too long. And,
yeah,
and what
yeah,
I do
yeah.
is I've concluded that I'm reserving all my what little brain capacity I have to memorize things for the show. So I'm like, I don't know if any of you guys saw it, and I don't even remember the name of it now, but it was a Netflix original, and it was so I'm sure you didn't see it because it's a cartoon. Comic, I don't know what they call it, kids thing, right?
Okay.
And there's a robot that has to keep erasing his memories.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's going to run out of space. That's me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a terrible memory too, but I definitely remember that conversation.
So what were we talking about?
It was at the time when.
Were we on different sides or the same side?
My take was I thought there was a middle position where you could reconcile the take of Bill Maher and Sam Harris and the take of Glenn Greenwald and Noam Chomsky. You were coming from the camp of no, Glenn Greenwald and Noam Chomsky are correct. And I was coming from the camp of, well, yes, they are about all these things, but I think they missed the point here when it comes to what Maher says and what Harris says. So I was kind of trying to find a middle ground there between the two, and you were repping the Chomsky-Greenwald camp. This was in 2014, because that was when the issue was big, because I think it was related to when Ben Affleck went on Real Time with Bill Maher.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and there was the
wow,
back and
that
forth.
Was all the way back in 2014?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Time flies, man. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
It's really scary how fast it feels like. You blink, and I'm 30 now, and I remember, I have a distinct memory. This is going to sound weird, but I remember telling my mom when I was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, and I'm walking with her to the mailbox to get the mail. I remember telling her, I can't wait until I'm 12 years old. I have that memory in there, and then now I'm 30, and it's like, oh no, time, slow down.
Oh yeah, yeah, wait till you get to 48. Then you're gonna wanna slam the brakes rather than tap the brakes. Are you ready to concede that I was right about Sam Harris?
Well, yes, as time has gone by with Harris, there's so many things now where he's just like really, really wrong, and he doesn't, he assumes bad intent of all of his critics.
Yes.
And it's really 100%. Maddening. And he did it with Ezra freaking Klein, man. Milquetoast Ezra Klein, who's really not at all controversial. And his whole thing is, and I don't agree with Ezra Klein on everything, but his whole shtick is like, I'm the data guy and here are the numbers on the thing that we were talking about. And Sam Harris made it
voice.
Seem... Sam Harris made it seem like, no, you're a smear merchant, and how dare you disagree with me having on Douglas Murray, I think it was it? No,
yeah.
Douglas Murray is the guy, the race science guy with the bell curve.
Definitely
and
Murray.
Like,
yeah.
So he acts like there's no legitimate scientific critique of that guy, and that's just not true. If you look it up, there's a lot of legitimate critique of that guy.
No, his shtick is so tired, and it's the same like robotic talking points.
I think a lot of people like his delivery style, and they fall for that. Because I think a lot of people look at a guy like you or a guy like me, and they think, oh, yeah, hot-headed, whatever. Perhaps you more than me.
Yeah.
But they hear a guy like him who talks very, you know, it's almost like he's on Xanax 24/7. And they think, oh, so I know he's the right one because he seems very calm. And I don't even need to point out how much of a logical fallacy that is. And ironically, I'm pointing this out to the crowd that always shouts about logical fallacies.
Yeah. No. And so when he did it like 3 times, the jury was in. Now he's done it like 28 times.
Yeah.
But it's everyone who criticizes Sam Harris, he's like, oh, you have bad intent. You're lying on purpose.
And also, Noam freaking Chomsky, man.
Yeah, he picked
Noam
a fight
Chomsky.
With him to get famous.
I mean,
it's so sad. Sad, yeah. Sad.
He's considered one of the, you know, foremost intellectuals of our time. And, you know, Harris's response was basically, oh, he's just a liar and a smear merchant and he's refusing to actually have a conversation. And it's like, no, he actually spent like 6 pages in emails trying to explain to you why he really disagrees with you and why you're not characterizing him properly and yada, yada, yada. But it all goes right over their head.
Yeah, so no, the Sam Harris shtick is, if I speak softly like you're listening to NPR, it will give you the facade of intelligence. And Shapiro's shtick is, if I talk really fast, you won't be able to understand my talking voice. You see how smart I am? I put in a couple of numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. So, anyway, speaking of which, that brings us to the conversation at hand. So I promised you guys that I would give you a couple of the things that I was going to say to Tucker Carlson if I got more antagonists.
I'm very curious about this. I'm very interested in what you're going to say, because I think it was a very good debate and discussion.
Yeah, and so I'm not a robot like those guys, so I do it based on what the other person's saying.
Yeah.
Right? So if they're going to be a douche, not too good play at that game. I've been known to be a douche a couple of times.
It's hard to out-douche Coulter, but...
Yeah. But certainly, so what I don't tolerate is not punching back, okay? So those guys punch, and most of the time liberals take it. No way. That's not how I roll, that's not how you roll.
No, not at all. Of course
they're going to punch back, right? But Tucker didn't punch much, so I'm like, oh, look, if he wants to have an honest conversation, let's do that. That's better, right?
Yeah.
So, but the things that I had prepared, because I didn't know which way it was going to go, one, I was going to talk about how old his audience is.
Tucker Carlson's?
Yes.
I'm actually curious, does he have a slightly younger audience than the rest of Fox, or is it all super old?
No, it's old.
Really? Oh, okay. See, that's it. I honestly thought that maybe he was starting to win some millennials over. I'm not kidding. I thought that was the case.
Yeah, it's a nice shtick, but it's not true.
Wow. Okay.
So here are the actual numbers. The average age of, and to be fair to Fox News, I don't know if it's because they some folks passed away or whatever, but overall their average age has dipped a little bit. It used to be up to 68. Now,
well,
it's,
Bill O'Reilly got me too'd, so a lot of the older guys are gone.
Yeah. Some of those guys left. Anyway, it used to be 68. Now in prime time, where Tucker Carlson is, it's 66. Okay, but 66 is really, really old. And I know some of you guys are there. My dad's like 81, and it's not to insult old people. It's just one to give people context, because no one knows that number, and they give them so much power.
Yeah.
And even Kyle, you thought maybe he's reaching millennials.
No, I did. Yeah, I really
right.
did. Yeah.
And so I was just going to say, Tucker's basically doing his show out of a senior citizen center. And
fair point, given the number.
Yeah. And when folks get riled up by Tucker, they raise your canes in the air like you just don't care. So I left that one in my back pocket.
I'm happy it didn't come to that, though.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. I'm glad it didn't come to that. And so then I want to give you a sense to ask your answer to be even more specific about the millennial question. And to be fair to Tucker, he does have a big size audience, right? So 2.8 million people was, I think, the last quarter, okay? So that's an average, and over 3 months, I believe. And that's the third largest in cable news. So Hannity's one, Rachel Maddow's number two. Sometimes they switch. And then Tucker Carlson's number three, okay? But of the 2.8 million people, how many are under the age of 54?
How many are under the age of 54? You said 2.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
500,000?
Very good, very close, 600,000,
okay?
So less than a quarter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's an older audience for sure.
So about 22% or so are under the age of 54. It's not, look, I'm getting there, but 54 ain't that young, right?
Yeah.
So that means like 78% of his audience is above the age of 54. That's amazing. That's amazing.
That is amazing, yeah.
Right? You watch Game of Thrones?
No, not yet, but I plan on it.
Yeah. So this doesn't give anything away. It's just a great little speech in the middle of one of the seasons that Varys gives. Power is a shadow on a wall. It's what people think it is. So if everyone stopped talking about Fox News and they stopped showing it in all the other press outlets, you know, and congressional offices, they would have no power at all. Who cares about the 3 million people? Okay, that's a big number for the top two shows, but that's 1% of the country. It's less than 1% of the country.
Let me just say, this reminded me of exactly what happened at Politicon. So they put my debate, it originally was supposed to be with Coulter backed out. First of all, they have no idea how many people they annoyed by having it get to that point.
Yeah.
But they put my debate in something called the K Street Lobby.
Mm-hmm.
The K Street Lobby is probably their smallest room. The place was beyond packed to the point where there were equal numbers of people sitting down and standing up to watch the debate.
Yeah.
So they didn't understand that their perception of power was, this is Governor Chris Christie.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? This guy's going to give him the giant auditorium. I went to Chris Christie's thing, and I asked a question at his town hall. The room was fucking 25. Oh, can I curse on this one?
Yeah,
okay.
You can.
The room was 25% full.
Yeah.
It was 25%. My room was beyond packed. So yeah. Their perception is that guy Kyle has no power, not as big of an audience as Chris Christie, when the exact opposite is the case.
And I told one of the guys at Politico, and I said, look, it's totally fine to bring Chris Christie, and you could bring him to get MSNBC and the other mainstream media outlets interested enough to show up, because they don't know Kyle Kulinski,
right.
But they're obsessed with Chris Christie. But if you want people to show up,
yeah.
That's when you need Kyle and us. And to be fair, Ben Shapiro,
from
the right wing, right?
For sure.
But the people who know, who's going to buy a ticket to go see Chris Christie, right? I mean,
He's the afterthought. Oh, I really want to go see this with the Young Turks or Kyle or Ben Shapiro, but sure, we'll stop over the Christie thing.
Yeah.
And that's why there's a difference between somebody who knows who you are and somebody who's a fan or somebody who's a listener.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference.
100%. And so I've been telling these guys, and I think I might have put it in one of the behind the scenes that we did. But anyway, the face. So when this happened to Anna 2 years ago, it happened to Kyle this year. When they're announced and a bunch of mainstream media guys have already been announced and it's like a nice tepid applause, then Kyle comes out and people roar, go, ah! And
they're like, I don't understand.
Yeah. And I don't mean this in any bad way, but Kari Sellers did the face this time. He was like,
yeah.
Like, what? I don't know who Kyle Kulinski is. He's not on cable news, but this whole room seems to know him and not us. What the hell's going on?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so, but that is why it's relevant that we're not on cable news, because our shadow, our size is substantial, our shadow is insubstantial.
Yep.
Keep it real.
That's okay? A good way of putting it, sure.
And so, for example, if he insulted our audience, after I insulted his, but by the way, or it might have just come out organically because, you know, a lot of the mainstream guys are dismissive.
Yeah.
So if he had done that, I would have said, look, 3 million is not a bad number, but Young Turks Network gets 7 million a day. And I'm sure that he would have snickered and et cetera. But it's true. It's real.
Yeah.
Right?
It's amazing how they just dismiss the online numbers. It really is. I had somebody respond. When Coulter backed out of the debate with me and then went on to say no liberal would debate her. I mean, I forgot where I was going with that point. I lost it. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah,
if it comes back, I'll bring it up.
Yeah, I'll come back to it. So I'll tell you couple other cutesy things, and then the overall topics that I wanted to get to that we didn't in an hour. It's impossible to get to any more than two topics. Basically, we did immigration and kind of money and politics and Trump. So maybe all three. Yeah. So there was just this peculiarity. If we got into regulations, he's against seatbelt regulations.
Tucker is?
Yeah, against seatbelt laws. So I researched it. He said it a while back.
Okay. I wonder if he would have flipped on that. He probably would have conceded that, because that's the whole room is going to laugh at him if he, you know? Because there was a lot of stuff. Whenever you really checkmated him, he almost acknowledged the checkmate and then had to course correct. I noticed that a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So one of your best punches that you landed was on tacos. Mm-hmm. What a weird sentence to say. In the debate, you really killed him on the tacos point. But Tucker had said, like, oh, tacos, that's an American food. And Tucker was also going on to make, but multiculturalism is crazy. And your point was, you can't say multiculturalism is crazy, but then also say tacos are American food, because that is, by definition, multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And so he was checkmated. And then he was like, let me talk my way out of this in a way where I'm semi-conceding the point. Mm-hmm. And he did that every time you cornered him in that way.
So then I looked up how many lives have been saved by seatbelt loss. And so
Ralph Nader, by the way, shout out to Ralph Nader. Is
100%.
He the one who got us seatbelts? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So now I have an exact number, or a good enough approximation of a number. I'll explain the math to you guys. So between 1975, when the seatbelt laws were put into place, and 2008, seatbelts saved 255,000 lives. And now they save 15,000 lives a year. So if you do a little bit of math, which I did, it's not exactly right because it's ramps up, but it's definitely close enough. It's about 400,000 lives that have been saved on that one regulation. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, that's a hell of a thing. And so as much as you can get angry at Ralph Nader, and I did in 2000, and we had him on the show multiple times, and we had big shouting matches over it, but saving 400,000 lives ain't no small thing. And you can never take that away from Ralph Nader.
Yeah.
Okay?
Sure.
So that's it. Like, you know, I talk about it every once in a while. I'd retire off of that, right?
Yeah.
That's one to retire off of.
Yeah, I mean, he pretty much did.
In fact, he should have before 2000, but that's a whole other thing.
I mean, we don't need to get into it, but I've seen convincing arguments that he is not the reason that the election went the way it did.
No, but that's what drives me crazy. So I ran into this guy who did the taco trucks. He's a MAGA guy. He's a Trump guy. He did. I don't know. I barely remembered it. During the 2016 campaign, he had a taco truck that went around with Donald Trump, but he was pro-Trump and he was. And whatever,
it was a minuscule
thing. And he comes up to me and he's like, yeah, you remember me? I'm the reason we won the election. And
what?
I was like, no, you're not.
I know who he is.
Right. But in a sense, well, he's definitely wrong. But all of it is right because it was decided by 78,000 votes in three states. And so that's a swing of 39,000 votes. Maybe it was the tacos, maybe it was the weather. And not maybe, it was all of them. And it was Hillary Clinton not going to those states. It was so in 2000, the butterfly ballot alone definitely made the difference, right? Pat Buchanan alone definitely made the difference in the fact that they put his name in a confusing way on the ballot in Palm Beach, okay? Did Ralph Nader alone make the difference? Fuck yeah, no question about it.
So here's the fact that got me. More Democrats voted for George W. Bush than people voted for Nader.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, I don't understand how we can blame Nader if that's the case. And it honestly was the same thing. 9% of Democrats voted for Trump in the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing fact to me. So when people say, 1% voted for Jill Stein, blame Jill Stein. It's like, well, what about the Democrats who voted for Trump?
No, but that's my point, which is that those two things are not necessarily connected. Those 9% were going to vote for Trump anyway, right? And so the people who voted for Bush that were Democrats were going to vote for him anyway.
So it's almost like backseat driving is useless in the first place. Why are we even having that conversation?
And don't get me wrong, like, first of all, Gore won. If the full recount of Florida, he won the state of Florida. He didn't just win the popular vote, he won the Electoral
and
College.
And the Supreme Court just
robbed him,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And they admit they robbed him because in the decision they said, this shall not be precedent for any other decision. In other words, we just made this up just so we could vote for Bush, okay?
Yeah.
It's outrageous. And he should have overcome Nader, he should have overcome the butterfly ballot, he should have overcome Pat Buchanan. It's always on the candidate. And
sure.
But
that's the main point.
That's the main point. But if you want to make an ancillary point, did the votes that went to Nader, would enough of them have gone to Gore to make the difference? Well, you know what? Maybe I should change my mind on that. You know why?
Why?
Because it didn't make the difference. Gore won. Right?
Fair
enough. Gore won the state of Florida.
Yeah.
So because I was going to say the 537 votes, but the 537 votes was a lie. It was never 537. It was never what the official count was. So what difference does it make if Gore actually won?
Isn't it amazing how history diverges and it can go in a wild direction simply based off something like this? Like, what was the Oliver Stone movie where that guy, I think the guy's name was Henry Wallace, correct me if I'm wrong, who was like almost like the Bernie of that time?
Yes, it was Henry Wallace.
Okay, yeah. And I don't remember the details of the story, but I think he was screwed and he was going to be the nominee or something.
He was going to be the VP. He was the VP in his third term.
Okay.
He was going to be the VP in his fourth term.
But
he was axed, and they put in Harry Truman, who was far more conservative.
Who went on to nuke?
That's right.
A million Japanese civilians.
A couple hundred thousand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look at that. Just from that fact alone, the course of history radically changed.
Well, there's two things about Roosevelt that radically changed the course of history. One, it's a little glib to say that it was just an overnight decision by Roosevelt because he had a lot of pressure from conservatives to put Truman on and take Henry Wallace. So they didn't care that much about Truman. He was a country bumpkin, a very low-level politician one cared about. He was kind of a throw-in. They just needed to get Wallace off because they knew that Roosevelt was sick, and Wallace was even more progressive than Roosevelt. They're like, no, under no circumstances.
Wallace would have won. Hashtag Wallace would have won. Oh,
that's
like
right.
Bernie would have won.
Hashtag never Truman. So, but the way that it went down, the way that I recollect it, and I'm not that old that I wasn't there, it was also from, you know, from reading history and et cetera, is that Roosevelt changed his mind the night before. So if he got a good night's sleep, if he'd gone to a Holiday Inn or whatever.
Yeah, something, anything.
Yeah, Wallace would have been the most progressive president we ever had. He almost certainly would not have killed a couple hundred thousand civilians in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and we would have won the war anyway, right? But domestic policy-wise, he could have been amazing.
Perhaps we would have already had universal health care.
Yeah, so that's the bad break that we caught as progressives and as the country on that. The good break was, and this is a tragic good break, but it's same from the Oliver Stone movie. Roosevelt gets elected, and he's in Chicago, and this is my rough recollection of this too. And some Italian, I don't know if it was a communist, whoever it was, okay, decided he hated Roosevelt. He got up on a chair to shoot him, and the chair wobbled. It turned out it was not stable. It was a wobbly chair. So he moved and shot.
I never knew this.
Yeah.
I never knew there was an assassination attempt on FDR.
And it accidentally hit the Chicago mayor. I think he died.
Oh my goodness.
Right. So Roosevelt's life is saved.
Wow.
And if Roosevelt had died, then we never would have gotten Social Security.
That's unbelievable.
Okay, because back then Henry Wallace was not his VP. Back then they changed VPs all the time. In his first term, Henry Wallace was not the vice president. It was a very conservative Democrat who was his vice president. Never would have gotten Social Security, never would have gotten any of the progressive changes that made this country what it is.
And FDR, that's amazing to hear. I really had no idea there was an assassination attempt on him. He was, according to the polls, he was insanely popular too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's wild. So an insanely popular president was still targeted for assassination, even though he—
I mean, remember, they tried to do a coup on him too, the business interests.
That's right, and remember, he's the reason that we have term limits now, because the Republicans said, we cannot beat somebody who's a strong social democrat, who's implementing these New Deal policies, so we need term limits to block them from continuing to win. Because we can't beat them, they're so popular.
Otherwise, the populist progressives will win for the rest of
time. That's right, that was literally what it was. We need term limits because these guys are too popular.
So that's a great point. Okay, back to the insults. I was going to say, I looked up to see if he was Swedish, because Carlson's a very Swedish last name. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, they didn't have that information, so I was going to ask him, Carlson, is that Swedish? And presumably he would have said yes, if we were talking about socialism, which is what he demagogues on the on there. I would have said, Tucker, little do you know, you come from a long line of socialists.
Yeah, here's what he would have said in response. They were homogeneous, or whatever the word is.
I can't
say that word.
No, it's tough. I struggle with it too, from time to time.
Yeah.
And I know he's going
to
say that.
Yeah, and that's a dumb thing to say. Because all you have to say is, well, Canada is significantly to the left of us. They're not as far left as the Nordic states, admittedly, but they're significantly to the left of us, and they destroy us on the issue of healthcare. So the idea that, like, oh, you need all white people to have rational policies.
Yeah.
That's the argument at its core.
Yeah, and it's not going to help your cause that your complaint about demographics and culture is not racial if you then say, well, you know, these Nordic countries are all white. So
but Jay, that point is scarily common. I've heard so many people make that point, and it's one of those things where, and the people saying it, they have no clue that the core of it really is a bigoted point. And I'm not one to quickly pull that card and say, oh, that's bigoted. But if your point is, hey, the reason why they're able to get good things done is because they're all the same race, that's close to the definition of it.
Yeah, of course. And so why do they keep saying Venezuela, now Charlie Kirk pulling out Zimbabwe
as
socialist? Like scary brown people. Yeah. How come you never talk about Norway, Sweden, Finland? Part of the reason is because they're white. The second reason is because they're enormously successful.
Yeah,
they're socialist countries that are wildly successful. Yep. Finland has number one education system in the world. And by the way, all those countries admit far more Muslim refugees and immigrants per capita than we do.
That's true.
So that also hurts their homogeneous point.
Yeah.
So apparently admitting Muslim refugees didn't hurt them, and socialism didn't hurt them, and they rank way higher than us in healthcare. So that was another topic that I was hoping we'd get to, healthcare, which we didn't. So I used to quote with 37th because that was in the Michael Moore movie. So I looked it up again, and according to one of the recent studies,
the Commonwealth Fund, we're worse in the developed world.
Yeah. Well, so there's a number of different ones. One Commonwealth Fund studied just 11 developed countries.
Yes, and we're the worst in the developed world.
Yes, yeah, absolutely the worst. 11th out of 11th.
Yeah.
And then there was another, not Commonwealth Fund, another survey that looked at 27 countries. I'm sorry, at far more countries, and we came in 27th. And
wow.
It looked at 72 different factors in grading our health.
Yeah.
And we're 27th. And as a percentage of our GDP, the countries that finish at the top, they spend 9 to 11% of their GDP, about 10% overall. We spend 17% of our GDP, now growing almost to 18% of our GDP on just healthcare, right? So we spend about twice as much as the other countries and are ranked 27th.
Okay, so here's to add on to that fact. Our private health insurance system, 80% of the money goes towards actual healthcare. 20% goes to overhead costs. And now that's after Obamacare forced them to make that the case. Before it was close to 50-50. Half the money would go towards healthcare, half the money would go towards overhead costs. You know what it is in Medicare? How much money goes to actual care? 92%.
That's so amazing.
It's just a fact to say it's more efficient. That's not conjecture, that's not opinion, that's not something that, you know, we got from Code Pink. That's just the truth. So, and this is one of those issues on healthcare where I think we're so overwhelmingly correct and there's just absolutely no argument on the other side that I would run elections, perhaps even on this issue alone, to just wipe out the Republicans from coast to coast.
So, well, it's funny you say that because number one, they kind of are. Even the Democrats got the memo, oh man, people are really pissed about their healthcare situation. And they poll like 26 points better than the Republicans on healthcare.
Yeah.
And so I have an interesting perspective because I do Rebel Headquarters. And I talk to Democrats running not only in blue districts, but in really red districts. Mm-hmm. And I always ask them, what are the top issues? And number one in a landslide is healthcare.
Yep.
Number two is corruption.
Yep. Okay. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And number three is wages.
Yep.
I mean, it's
totally rational.
But Kyle, when we started Just Democrats, what are the four things that we focus on?
That was the top.
The top three were no-brainers.
That's right.
Corruption, healthcare, money, and wages.
How's this for a fact? Trump Care, the bill he proposed to replace Obamacare, repeal it and then replace it with Trump Care, it had a 12% approval rating. Mm-hmm. Medicare for All has a 70% approval rating, including a 52% approval rating among Republicans.
Yeah, and I'll go one more step here. So they do a bait and switch a lot of times, and Charlie Kirk did it in the debate he had with Hassan, where he said, you want socialized medicine like the Veterans Administration. No, wait a minute. Veterans Administration is not just insurance. It's the doctor, the hospital, it's comprehensive. In reality, we're not asking for that. We're asking for socialized health insurance. That's what Medicare is.
Public funding of private entities. Public funding of private entities.
Right.
Honestly, you could honestly do it either way and it's better than what we have. But I take your point and I think that in the context of the United States, it's better to do more of a French-style system, which is public funding of private institutions, than a UK-style system, which is public funding of public institutions.
By the way, the UK in the Commonwealth Fund finished number one.
Yeah, see, that's my point. And also, on the VA, they demagogue on that issue a lot. But what's interesting is this fact. The VA polls as significantly more liked than our private health insurance system does. Mm-hmm. So even their boogeyman example is better than what they're defending. And here's the other thing. They always talk about rationing care. Like, oh, we don't ration it now. We do ration it now under our system. In fact, there's between 32,000 and 45,000 people that die every year in the US because they don't have access to basic health care. So what they do is they take an anecdotal story of one person in a single payer country and they say, oh my God, this woman named Barbara wasn't able to get her surgery on time. So you have one anecdotal story on this side. I have 45,000 dead bodies lying on a wait line on this side.
Yeah, one of the progressives we had on from the state of New York, a legislator there who is pushing for Medicare for all, made a good point. And I don't know why I never thought of it this way. And he said, you know, and if you don't know, there's 28 million people. No, sorry. When Obama left, there was 28 million people left uninsured. So it was used to be 44 million before Obama. Give him credit. He brought it down to 28, but still 28 uninsured. Now, Trump added 3 million last year. I couldn't find the number for what he added
lost
the year
3
before.
He lost, lost 3 million. Lost health insurance.
Yeah, added 3 million to the number of uninsured.
Right. There
okay.
You go.
So it's now over 30 million that are uninsured. Anyway, the guy, the legislator said, you know, if you're uninsured or you ran into a cap, which happens all the time, hey, your insurance only covers $1 million. And if your surgery or your operations go beyond that, that's it. You're on your own. You're going to die. Okay.
Or you go bankrupt.
Or it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can't, if it's cancer, you can't, bankruptcy doesn't solve it. No one's going to give you the money. You're going to die. Okay. And so you can't go to an emergency room. And he said, look, if you're in that situation and your kid has cancer, we have just given them the death sentence.
Yeah.
So this
so they're the real death panels. The
exactly.
private health insurance companies are the real death panels.
100%.
Yeah, I've made that point over and over.
Yeah. And one of the things I was going to ask Tucker is, are you comfortable with that? Are you comfortable in a system where if you don't have insurance and now over 10% of the country doesn't have insurance, tens of millions of people don't have insurance. In a system where you don't have insurance, if your kid gets cancer, he dies, period. Are you comfortable with that?
Now, again, I'm curious what he would have said about that because they're on a bunch of economic stuff. He either conceded or semi-conceded to you. And I think that if he really wants to keep up his little tap dance of, oh, I'm populist, I just hate brown people, but I'm populist, well, yeah, then he should concede on healthcare too. Do you think there's a chance he would have conceded, or do you think he would have?
I don't know.
Because I find it hard to wrap my mind around him being a total apologist for our disastrous healthcare system that we have now.
Yeah. That's why he's a mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
And so last thing, because we can do this all night long, and then I want to ask you about your debate. So, and we got to go. Okay, so is that socialized health insurance is Medicare. Medicare, forget Medicare for all. Medicare polls a 77%,
yep, mm-hmm.
Okay? So apparently people love socialized medicine.
Yeah.
The people who get it in this country, not in the UK, not in Finland, they love it.
Yep.
Find something else that pulls a 77%. You'll only find two other things, Social Security and getting money out of politics.
Yeah,
okay.
That's why the Republican talking points make no sense. I mean, I love this new one that they have. They say Medicare for all is Medicare for none.
Yeah.
That's like, and I made this analogy. That's like saying, oh, we're going to have a program where we give shoes to everybody. And the response is, why do you like want to give shoes to nobody, bro?
No, but we just said,
wait, that makes no sense. I said I don't want to give it to everybody. I want to expand it.
It says to all.
But here's the thing, Jake. It cleared a boardroom of Republicans. They all sat around and somebody floated that and they were like, that's genius. We're going with that one.
And they all wrote it as a memo and they gave it to all the Republicans. You know why, though? Because they're desperate.
Yeah, I know.
Because they got nothing.
I know. So now they...
They're like, why don't we pretend it doesn't exist?
So now Trump writes the dumbest op-ed I've ever read against Medicare for All. Paul Ryan gives the dumbest speech I've ever heard against Medicare for All. And then now the question is, will the Democrats go, you know what, enough, we're going Bernie Sanders style, or will they go the Chuck Schumer route and say, well, you know, maybe we can find the middle point.
Sight unseen, Chuck Schumer. I answered Chuck Schumer. You don't have to finish the sentence. Okay.
Yeah.
They learn nothing. They learn nothing whatsoever. Okay, because again, it's not about learning. It's they're taking money from the pharmaceutical companies. So look, I can go on and on. I wanted to just, and partly because I'm genuinely curious, partly if it got confrontational, I wanted to corner him on these stuff. On deficits, Reagan doubled the deficit. Clinton created a surplus from like $300 billion deficit to $236 billion surplus. Bush took it from a surplus to $1.4 trillion deficit. I mean, you go on and on.
Yeah.
And now Trump's going to double it again in just 2 years. So will you concede that Republicans don't care about deficits?
Yeah, and Cheney did. to his credit. He's like, yeah, deficits don't matter. We don't care about deficits. They use it as a political tool to bludgeon their opposition over the head with. The reality is they've actually, ironically, they've bought into the logic of MMT, modern monetary theory, which is even left of Keynesian economics, which is like the idea that, no, seriously, literally, deficits don't matter because we control our own currency. So it's not that big of a deal. You know, the thing that would really lead to inflation is political instability. So as long as you don't have the political instability, yeah, you could run deficits as far as the eye can see. Now, I know you probably don't even agree with that.
I don't agree with that
right
at all.
But the point is, the Republicans have bought into the logic of MMT while they deficit troll the left. Because whenever we propose something, they go, oh, how are you going to put, what are you going to add healthcare to the deficit? I care about deficits.
Yeah, there's so bullshit. Yeah. All right, like I said, we can go all night. It's just real quick, because I didn't get a chance to see it, because I was prepping for the Tucker thing. How did your debate with Scottie Nell Hughes go?
It was pretty good. She is about 9,000 times more reasonable than Ann Coulter.
And, oh, wow. I didn't see that coming.
On many issues, we agreed. I was able to sway her in my direction. And there were a few issues where we didn't agree. One of them was Israel. And Medicare for All was another one where we didn't agree. Uh-huh. But it was good. It was a good debate. I know that the audience probably wanted me to slit somebody's throat and hold the head up and scream.
Yeah.
But be mad at cowardly Coulter about that and not at me. And by the way, I just want to say Ben Shapiro also passed on a debate with me. Jesse Lee Peterson also passed on a debate with me. We went through almost every single conservative that was there. And every single one of them passed. Then I said to the people at Politicon, I'll do a 2-on-1. They said, okay, we'll ask. Passed. Then I said to them, I'll do a 3-on-1.
That's my kind of guy.
They passed.
Okay.
So that's, you know, they talk about safe spaces and snowflakes. The only safe space I see is the one that they're in, and they're the real snowflakes.
What do I do? I can get every single year.
The guy who does a Kyle driver.
There were a lot of tweets on that, thanks to you at from Politicon.
That's awesome. All right, well, I'll have to catch it on tape. Okay, guys, much love. And Kyle, thank you.
Of course, man. Thank you.
Everybody check out Secular Talk, and you're going to be on Joe Rogan tomorrow.
Yes.
It ought to be interesting.
Yep, should be fun.
Yep, and we'll see you hopefully soon.
Yep, awesome, man. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yep, we'll see you tomorrow.